There they go again, the Cannibali, the Vincenzo Nibali fan club.
Little did we realise it at the time, but the thrilling denouement of the 2016 Giro d'Italia also marked the end of an era for Italian cycling. Or, one could say, the beginning of a drought that lasts until this day. That is a whole decade without an Italian winner of the Giro. Juxtaposed with Vincenzo Nibali's tears of joy that afternoon and the screams of his tifosi was the dignified anguish of Stephen Kreizweig.
Stephen Kreizweig comes over the line and collapses on the tarmac. He's got.
I couldn't do any more than I did, and this was it. And after a crash like yesterday, you have to fight and to see where you finish. And
he had led for most of the race's second half, only to crash into a snowdrift on the way down the Colle dell'Agnello on stage 18. The winner that day was Esteban Chavez, who also took the pink jersey. The Colombian too, though, would eventually succumb to Nibali on that extraordinary penultimate afternoon in Sant'Anna di Vinadio.
Dai, no, siamo italiani, giusto parlare italiano, forza Nibali.
Forza Nibali, they didn't want to speak any English, but I think you got that. That was the Cannibali, Vincenzo Nibali's long-time
the cycling podcast club. Had chosen a beguiling, uncertain, but in some ways eccentric Giro as our first to cover from end to end. There'd been the Grande Partenza in the Netherlands.
There we are then, the 2016 Giro d'Italia is underway. That was the crowd cheering Fabio Sabatini, the first rider to tackle the opening stage time trial here in Apeldoorn.
26-year-old former ski jumper Primož Roglič winning the showpiece time trial in Chianti in his first major tour. A completely off-colour Nibali until the final rest day, and Kreizweig's unexpected reign in pink. Nothing, though, was as incongruous as what happened in the Stage 15 mountain time trial to Alpe di Susi.
Alexander Foliforov, stesso tempo per la maglia rosa.
That day, we had our own issues in the cycling podcast car.
Not the only cock-up we've made today, it has to be said.
Oh, we've had a shocker today, haven't we? We've driven unnecessary kilometres on the motorway.
But we just about made it into the cable car and up the mountain in time to see a rank outsider, the Russian Alexander Foliforov, edge out Kreizweig by fractions of a second to win the stage, while Nibali's struggles continued.
Vincenzo Nibali slumped over on the fence. Obviously not a good day for him. A massive scrum, as always, at the finish line. He hasn't really got room to breathe here. Shaking his head, not happy at all. He doesn't want to speak to anyone. Well, Esteban Chavez is smiling as he always is. Let's see what he has to say. I think he's up to...
Foliforov had begun the day in 58th position on GC. He rolled down the start ramp nearly 2 hours before Kreizweig et al. His team's presence at the race, thanks to a wildcard invitation, was itself a huge shock, costing Gianni Savio's Androni their annual Giro adventure and raising suspicions of flagrant political manoeuvring. The man behind Gazprom was the billionaire Igor Makarov, who also just happened to hold an influential position in the UCI. The team rode Italian Colnago bikes fitted with Campagnolo components, but it was Makarov's influence and money that had surely secured their place at the Giro. Unpopular before the race, Gazprom's invitation hadn't exactly been vindicated by their performances in the first 2 weeks. And yet Foliforov had now won the most transparent of all versions of the race of truth, the mountain time trial.
Yes, it's a surprise for me. And for all, I don't believe that...
Not that the Italian media had much time or column inches for the 24-year-old who had caused a sensation. The biggest broadsheet in the country, the Corriere della Sera, devoted an entire double-page spread to the time trial and mentioned the stage winner precisely once. Foliforov himself seemed stunned, although also confident this wouldn't be the last we'd hear of him.
I'm young and I think only it's only begin.
Peter. Della classifica generale al termine della...
Alas, that proved to be wishful thinking. One of the more notable one-hit wonders of recent years, the Australian singer-songwriter Gautier, reflected on his 2011 life-altering chart smash, Somebody That I Used to Know, thus: I sometimes feel like I'm not even a musician, I'm just this guy who had a song that everyone knows. It's like a piece of furniture in everyone's house. The impact and memory of Alexander Foliforov's Dolomite lightning strike remains restricted to a niche community of diehard cycling fans. And yet the parallel exists. Around his name and that day, a legend has grown. often seasoned with a knowing smirk. There have been the memes, lots of them, but then also, this year for the 10th anniversary, flickers of interest from the mainstream media. In their reconstruction of Kruiswijk's Giro, the Dutch magazine Wieler Review zeroed in on the Alpe d'Huez time trial. Without doubt, the most noteworthy quotes in their article came from Kruiswijk's then teammate Jos van Emden. At a certain point, van Emden said the Russian was more than half a minute behind, then he was far ahead of Steven, and at the finish line he had lost a lot of time again. It is crystal clear that he was hanging on to the car. What was missing from the piece was Filifov's rebuttal, or indeed any reaction from the Russian. He had retired only 2 years after his Giro moonshot and then more or less vanished. For a while he posted semi-regularly on Instagram, pictures from holidays, one from a football match at the San Siro, or a trip to Dubai. There were precious few clues as to what had become of him. I frankly didn't harbour too much hope of tracking him down, but I was wrong. A direct message on Instagram was answered within a couple of hours. Less than a day later, I was sitting in a Giro d'Italia press room, he in front of a laptop at what is now home in Limassol, Cyprus. We were separated by a couple of thousand kilometres, but united by the marvels of modern technology and the common desire to relive one of the most curious chapters in recent Giro d'Italia history.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Alexander. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Can you see and hear me?
Yes.
I can't see you at the moment.
One moment.
There you are. Fantastic.
Yes. It's me. Sorry, I want to tell you now, my English is quite poor, and I'll try to explain everything, but I'm not perfect, let's say, in English.
No, it sounds good. It sounds good. So listen, I've seen in the last few years, people have talked a lot about this, and there've been memes about Filifov Day, which you're, I guess, aware of. I was wondering, this year, have you had any other interview requests?
Honestly, I received one request from guy, I can tell you, I don't remember exactly, Dutch.
Right.
Dutch.
I think because there was a Dutch magazine which did a story a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago about 2016. They talked about the time trial. There were some quotes from Jos van Emden about you.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that later. First of all, Alexander, I thought where we'd start was by you just telling me a little bit how you got into cycling, because we didn't really hear much about that at the time, where you were born and how you became a professional.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't give a lot of interviews, even when I retired. I refused all interviews because I don't like media, let's say, in general. But now I think I'm ready after 10 years to tell some words about me, because it's really a big interest for my person in different media and so on. Yeah, I was born in Kovrov, it's a small city in Russia, 300 kilometers from Moscow. And I came to cycling because my father is cycling coach. I started at 7 years, when I was 7 years old. And I was quite fast in this age. And then I was in Kovrov, and then all best teams in Russia proposed me to join them. It was like Samara team, Moscow team, Lokomotiv, Loko Sphinx, it's a St. Petersburg team. And my choice was Moscow team, and I started with Moscow. But this team in general was track team on Velodrome. By the way, my teammates were world recordsmen on team time trial pursuit. And I started right with them. And then I went to Katyusha team, to young Katyusha team. My first year in under 23, I was in Katyusha team, not continental. and we had one training. It was time trial to climb. On the training, it was continental team, young team, track team, so around 40 guys. It was in Cyprus. Yeah, we were on the training camp there in winter, and the main coach of all Katyusha decided to do this event, and we did it, and I was second after Sergei Fersanov. He was old already, quite old, and I was 18 years old only, and I was second. And after this training, main coach proposed to me to sign contract with Continental Team Katyusha, and I started to race with them from 18 years old. From 19, then I was 19.
Because even on the day, you said, this is my favorite discipline. This is my favorite type of race, the uphill time trial.
Yes, it's true. So people still can't believe that I won, honestly, let's say. But if you will check all my time trials to the climb, I always was fast. It's true. I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know why. On the group races, I cannot be so fast like on time trial. But I was always very fast. I was like fifth place on Kopi Bartali on one stage, but it was 10 kilometers flat and only 2-3 kilometers, very, very steep climb. I was fifth. On Valle d'Aosta, I was fifth. I was third. Tour de Slovenia, I guess I was something fourth or something like this. But all these time trials were not pure climb. It was with flat. That's why maybe I was not the first. Yeah. Unfortunately, in pro cycling, we don't have a lot of time trials to the climb. And my dream was if maybe one day it will be like Olympic race. Yes, something like this, or world championship, or European championship, but no. It's very rare races, and that's why I won only one sure climb time trial.
Okay, so it was obviously quite surprising when Gazprom were invited to the Giro that year. There was a lot of discussion, why have they been invited, and so on. But just tell me, Alexander, a bit about what your life was like in 2016. Where were you living? Did you have a girlfriend? Tell me a bit about it.
From 2012, I have lived in Italy because the base of the team, Katyusha, and then Gazprom was in Italy. And I lived nearby in Disenzano del Garda. On the Garda, yes. And all my career, I lived there. All years. And of course in 2016 also. We shared a flat with my teammate Ildar Arslanov from Gazprom Rusvel, yeah. And almost all the year I was in Italy, maybe only 1 month a year I was in Russia. Other time I was in Italy and on the races. And yes, I had a girlfriend this time. What else? Yes, Russian girlfriend, because I didn't speak Italian. I understood quite good, but I didn't speak. We lived a lot of Russian riders lived in one area, let's say. And we only speak with each other. That's why it was difficult to learn some language. That's why it was a pure Russian team.
So you get picked for the Giro d'Italia. What can you remember about, or what did you think you were going to discover at the Giro? Did you think you were going to find it really hard? Did you think that this was going to be a big opportunity for you to show everyone what you could do?
Yeah, when we got invitation to, not invitation, slot, let's say, slot to Giro d'Italia, our team, I was very surprised, and my main goal was to join the team, because it's only this time, I guess, time it was 9 riders. I don't remember, honestly, yeah. And my main goal was to join the team on Giro, and I started season quite good, and then team told me that I will go, and it was really one of the best days in my life, because, you know, it's Grand Tour, it's the main event for every cyclist, for every rider. That's why everyone wants to join Giro Tour or Vuelta, doesn't matter, yeah, to start this race. And of course, my father, because he's a coach, was very happy that I will join the team. And but I didn't think that I can show something on this race. My main goal was just to finish the race, and that's it. To try a bit in breakaways, and that's it.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Get there, it was in the Netherlands, of course, the big presentation, a lot of people, great atmosphere. Just describe that for me if you can.
It was amazing. It's like the best event in my life, still. A lot of people, a lot of attention. You cannot go out from your bus because everyone wants to take a photo with you, to speak with you. Yeah, and it was really great and amazing. And when I returned from the Giro and went to another races, like, I remember that next race, it was Tour of Slovenia. And I came to this race and I thought, what is here? It's like nothing. Nobody around, no attention, and so on. Yeah. And I remember this flight when we flight from Netherlands to Italy. It was a plane only for riders, everything is pink. It was amazing. Yeah.
And did you have role models or heroes in the peloton? You know, you sometimes hear riders say, oh, Nibali was my hero, and my eyes were sort of popping out when I was riding next to him. I mean, what was it like for you?
I'm not that type of the people who is looking to others. Yeah. Maybe when I was very young, Denis Minshov was my favorite, but then for me it was not important.
And Just tell me a little bit about your family. You said your dad was a cycling coach. Were they excited? Did they go to Italy, and brothers and sisters? Just tell me a bit about your family and how they experienced it.
My father, as I told you, is a coach. He was a coach, now he retired. My mother was in our city, Kovrov, we have a big factory, military factory, and she was an engineer on this factory. We were not rich family, just almost poor, I'll say. Yeah. I have brother, by the way, he was cyclist before, but not cyclist, let's say. And then he went to sport arena on mountain bike. And he, if I'm not mistaken, he's 7 times world champion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's his first name?
Anton. You can find it easily, yes. But, okay, last year's Russia is blocked everywhere, and now he is not going to world championships, but he is racing only in Russia. But before, yes, he won 7 times, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember.
So let's go ahead to the day itself. You talked about you talked at the time about feeling tired the day before. Just tell me, how had the Giro been up until that point for you? How were you feeling generally? Did you feel as though you were in good form? Yeah, just tell me a bit about that.
Honestly, I started Giro in quite good shape. And first week was, I think, most difficult for me. Because it was a lot of flat, a lot of wind. Also in Netherlands, I got allergy because of trees, and it was spring trees and so on. Yeah. And second week was better, and third week was even better. So it's the best scenario for every rider to start not in perfect shape and finish in perfect shape. So this Giro was like that. Yeah. And the stage before time trial, it was, I don't remember, but it was difficult stage with a lot of elevation.
It was probably the hardest stage, actually. It was won by Chavez to Corvara in the Dolomites.
Yeah. And I already thought about next day, and I was in very good conditions, but I stopped myself. I didn't push. I just dropped from the first group just because I wanted to keep my power for the next day. Yeah. But anyway, next day I was very tired. Very tired. In the morning.
Just thinking about the team in general in that Giro. Were the directors happy with what you'd done so far? Or was there a lot of pressure to do more and do better?
With me, they were happy for sure, because it was 10 years ago. I don't remember. I 100% I did one breakaway with Pavel Brut, Daniel Oss and Chiruka, but it was flat stage, and group catch us maybe less than 10 kilometers till the finish. So it was okay. For our team, the main goal was to be in breakaways. You understand why? Because sponsors, they want to see you on TV and so on. Yes, our main goal was to be in every breakaway of the day. Yes, and I think I did two breakaways before this time trial, two big breakaways. On one stage, they catch us 10 kilometers till the finish, and another stage, I was maybe, I don't know, 13th place. Group with big boys catch me on the last climb, and I finished with them. This stage won, I guess, Nieve, if I'm not mistaken. Second was Visconti. They too was from my breakaway. I finished with the main group. We were maybe 15 people in the group. And on the sprint, I was at the end. Yeah, but it was still very, very good for our team. So my team was happy about it.
Okay, so on the day itself, what do you remember? Did you, for example, have any special equipment, or did you do anything special in the morning? Just talk to me a little bit about that, the preparations.
Yeah, yes. I woke up very, very tired, like 100% tired. It was difficult to wake up from the bed, even to go to have a breakfast. After the breakfast, I thought how I will go today because I am destroyed. Then I went to the start lane, to the start. And I started to warm up. I think it was 1.5 hours till my start. And I went to the road, not on the trainer. I went to the road. And when I started riding, I felt that my legs are very good. It's like, I don't know, perfect legs. I came to the bus and I asked our mechanics to put me the lightest wheels. I mean, we used Bora Campagnolo wheels, and I asked to put me Hyperon wheels. It's the thinnest one. Yeah. Okay. Mechanics told me that I'm stupid. I don't understand nothing. I have to use Bora 35, but I told no. Today it will be my rules. I want to go with these wheels. I asked to remove Garmin or SRM. I don't remember. Okay. Computer. I asked to remove computer, to remove mount from my handlebar, to remove one bottle cage. Also, I told to team that I will not use radio on this stage, because for me, time trial, it's like meditation, you know? I don't like when somebody tell me to my ear, go faster or 10 seconds behind and so on. I don't like it. I like quiet without any disturbing, and I don't like data on my computer, because what can you see there? For example, your goal is 400 watts, let's say, and you will go 380. You will be disappointed and you will lose before the finish. That's why for me it's better to not see nothing. Just push on the pedals and that's it. And go as fast as I can. So I told to the team to remove everything. Only one thing, yeah, like Pogacar last Tour de France, he removed bar tape. Only this I didn't do because he's smarter. Seems like. And yeah, that was my preparation for the race.
Della classifica provvisoria rimane per ora Jan Boswell, perché è arrivato al traguardo Tim Wellens, che ha fatto segnare.
Hey Daniel, yeah, stage 15, 2016 Giro, uphill TT. I was off fairly early in the day, and when I arrived at the top, found myself in the hot seat. I was there for a while. A few riders had come close to my time, but it wasn't until Alexander Filiferov from Gazprom Rusvelo came through nearly a minute and a half ahead of myself. And there's that photo that resurfaces every once in a while of just my face in complete disbelief and shock. I knew that I would be dethroned by some of the more kind of senior GC riders that day, you know, someone like a Kruijswijk. But I just did not expect to be beaten by so much by, frankly, a rider that I did not know at all. Didn't know his name, didn't know much about him. But he kind of shocked the world that day in a surprise result. That said, someone like Nibali was nearly 2.5 minutes behind him. Even I went quicker than Nibali. So sometimes in these uphill TTs, you do get surprising results in Grand Tours.
And so it was 19 minutes past three when you started, and I'm guessing you caught three riders, was it? Domo, Choruca, and maybe Kung as well? You might have caught four.
On the finish line, Kung.
Kung on the finish line.
A fourth I was him on the finish line.
So you must have felt during the ride that you were going really well.
I want to tell you that my goal, everyone is asking me, did you think that you will win? Of course, no. My goal was top 20. If I did top 10, it's the best that I can do. Yeah. And it's the first goal. Second goal was because I started, after me, it was around 50 riders, the strongest riders. And my goal was to finish, to be first on the finish lane, to sit a bit on this chair with cameras on you and so on, to show, because I wanted to show my father that, look, I'm on Giro, I'm on the first place, maybe I will be there 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, but even 1 minute is okay. That's why after finish the lane, they told me that I first, and I went to this chair. I ran to this chair to sit. Yeah. I rode without radio. That's why I didn't know how fast I am. Only in the middle of the okay, I catch some of the riders, but it doesn't make sense because I don't know. Maybe they are just relaxing at the end of the second week. Yeah. And in the middle of the distance, I heard that helicopter is somewhere here. And there is famous video like I'm riding, then I look to the helicopter and I started riding faster. And I look to the helicopter just to understand where is the camera of the helicopter, and I saw that camera on me, and on that moment I understood that I'm going fast. only in the middle of the distance. I understood that probably I'm the leader now.
Did you have your phone in the hot seat? Could you call your dad, for example?
Yes, of course. I called to my dad and also my friends. My team called me. Yes, and I spoke a lot on the chair.
Grazie Cristiano, al traguardo sta arrivando Joseph Lloyd Dombrowski per lo statunitense della Cannondale, una buona cronometro perché...
Yeah, so I do remember that stage. I think it was stage 15 in 2016, so almost 10 years ago now, pretty well. Personally, I was riding a pretty strong Giro, but was out of GC, and I remember that I wanted to put in a good effort, and I rode sort of an optimized setup at that time. I remember using tubeless tires, which no one was really using at that point. Now it's pretty standard. And ran a super light bike right at the weight limit. The only thing I probably could have done, which I think would have saved some time, was using clip-ons, because the bottom of the climb was quite flat. And I sort of had in my head, just based on how I was riding, that like there was a decent chance I would be in the hot seat, because I was, I don't know, somewhere in the 20s or 30s in GC, but felt like I was, you know, riding up there with the best guys, at least in terms of how I was climbing. And I was pretty surprised coming across the finish line. Boswell actually had the fastest time, but had been dethroned by Filiferov, which I don't think anyone saw coming. So I never actually held the fastest time. And, you know, surprisingly, no one overtook that. And I think what was also particularly surprising about that day was that his teammate, I think his last name was Firsinov, was finished top five as well. Kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. I know there's been a lot of theories as to how that victory came to be and the fact that both of them finished so highly. I mean, I don't want to sort of cast any aspersions as to how he did it, but it was definitely a bit of a shock result. And I think most other people would probably say the same.
Last thing, Larry, slightly off topic. If I say the name Alexander Filiferov to you, what comes to mind?
Yeah, the Gazprom dude who, actually I raced, I think, in the under-23s with him. So I knew him a bit before. And then, he won that Giro uphill time trial.
Spoke to him for an hour yesterday.
Did you really? Oh, wow. Did he say he held onto a car or no?
He definitely did not. Okay. He stridently denies having done any such thing.
I mean, the thing is, the guy actually had some really good climbing performances before. So I might have been one of the few people who was like, I mean, maybe he actually won it legit, you know. But I don't know. I know a lot of people were rather suspicious of him winning this one uphill TT and not really doing much else in his career. But
last thing then, Larry, on that, is it possible to hold onto a car in an uphill time trial? Is it in the World Tour?
I mean,
he says not.
I mean, the Bardiani guy who I passed in the TT sat on my wheel for like 15k and then attacked me at the end. So I think if you're in the middle of the
field, yeah.
If you're just like, yeah, in the middle of a TT, not one of like, yeah, not sort of near the top, I think there's probably a lot of stuff that could happen that no one sees.
Quick one, if I say to you Alexander Filiferov, tell me what comes to mind. Time trial, Alpedisiusi, Esteban, and you, I guess you were there.
Filiferov. I do not recall that name.
But you know who I'm talking about, don't you?
No.
The fellow who won Alpedisiusi 2016, you must have been there, you were there. Chavez, pink jersey.
I was.
Yeah, Gazprom, the lad from Gazprom who won the time trial.
Ah, it's all coming back to me now.
Well, I spent an hour on Zoom with
him this week. Hilly time trial, yes, and I never saw him again.
The one-hit wonder, I said to him, is it okay if I call this episode one-hit wonder? And he said, that's absolutely fine by me. Now you know who I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I do now. I had blanked that out of my memory.
Okay. Just a hot take. Can you remember what you thought that day? I mean, we probably spoke to you, but when you saw his name
it
at
was
the top
definitely
of the
surprise of the Giro. I think we did a little bit of research after, and he had some time trial results, but that was definitely... not expected. Not expected. Yeah, we beat the best GC guys in a brutal TT.
I just counted riders. Where last 10 guys started, I thought, it's unbelievable. I can be in top 10. Then I remember Nibali dropped the chain. And I thought, okay, maybe I will be faster than him. Maybe I will be, let's say, 9th or 8th place. Then I top 7, top 5th, top 4th, top 3. And when I understood that I will be top 3, it was amazing. I couldn't believe in that. Then I don't remember who, Chavez or Valverde, finished. And I understood that I will be 2nd. It only Kruiswijk. The last rider can beat me. And of course, you saw what was on the finish lane. The seconds was so slow at the time because cameras showed him like, I don't remember, maybe 200 meters till the finish line, and he had a lot of time for it. And I thought 100% I will lose. But seconds was slow, going, and at the finish line, it was 0, and it showed that I on the first place. And that moment, I don't know, I almost died. It was unbelievable, and still unbelievable, of course.
Is that the most vivid memory for you, or is it the podium, I don't know, the press conference, the celebrations? What's the moment that really sticks with you?
Yes, it's exactly this moment was, I will never forget it.
What were your teammates and directors' reactions at the time?
The same, like me. What did you do? They asked me, what did you do? How is it possible? I told, I don't know. I just won. I don't know how. I just rolled the pedals and that's it. And I was the fastest. It's unbelievable. Still, for me, it's still very, it's difficult to understand it, but it is like it is.
Maybe the most significant quote that I found, Alexander, the thing you said after the finish line was, this is just the beginning. And I guess by that, with that, you meant the rest of your career. Well, maybe we'll talk about that in a minute, but in the next couple of days, can you remember riders congratulating you or maybe even a reaction like Jos van Emden's? Can you remember other riders reacting like that, sort of with skepticism at the time?
Of course. Almost 99% of the riders congratulated me. Yes, of course. And I think only van Emden told me something not good, let's say.
And he accused you of holding onto a car.
After, yeah, I don't remember if it was on this, exactly on this Giro, maybe on other races. On other races, 100%, but on this Giro, maybe two. I don't remember, honestly.
I'd intended to ask van Emden about his quotes in Vela Review, and particularly his claim that Filiferov had been more than half a minute behind before beating Kruiswijk. The official splits, in fact, showed that Filiferov only trailed by 9 seconds at the first and only intermediate check. Van Emden at first seemed willing, but then decided it wasn't worth the hassle. He'd read Filiferov's sarcastic comments in another interview to the effect that he'd actually gone to Alpe di Susi in an Uber. Van Emden sent me his reaction to that in a voice message.
I honestly had to laugh about his reaction taking Uber. So the guy shows some sense of humor. And where I want to leave it at. The only thing is that I never saw anyone during my career who was specialized in doing climbing time trials and never do a good result on the uphill mountain hill ever. So, yeah, he must be a specialist in only climbing time trials.
You've probably heard plenty of other theories over the years. So,
yes, I saw it.
I'll just give you a few of them. The helicopter is one. Did the helicopter push him somehow? You know, we've seen that before, famously in Giro time trials. And another one was whether there was something in your bike, a motor in your bike. and also doping, obviously. These are the main accusation theories that people have leveled at you. What would you say to those?
Look, all my friends, all my family, all my teammates, all normal people understand that it is impossible. It is impossible to hold the car on Giro d'Italia. Why? Because it's only 10 kilometers. It's quite short distance. And on all the way, there is people with smartphones, motorcyclists, helicopters, cars. I catched 3 or 4 riders with cars also. How is it possible to hold the car even 1 second? It's impossible. And the main problem is that he has to understand it, because he is also a pro rider. He knows how it is. I don't know. It was very, very funny to read this, and I don't know what to say else. What can I say? Look, I cannot be sure 100% about if they checked my bike for engine, but I think it was. I don't remember, but I think it was. They checked my bike before the start. So if I had an engine, they will find it. About doping, what can I say? We have Adam's system, you know. And on this year, they checked me maybe 20, 30 times. Before Giro and after the Giro. And I can say more. In our team, it was very, very important for the team to check riders, because Gazprom is big company, and they don't want to be involved in such things, let's say. And except Adams, our team checked us before Giro few times. So I can say only this.
So, just going back to that quote, it's just the beginning, you said. But 2 years later, you were ending your career. And this is where we sort of lose the thread of the story. So what happened? Tell me what happened.
I had bad relationships with general manager of our team. That's why I finished the career. Renat Hamidulin. Look, I was Russian, and I was okay. I was not on the top level, I understand it, but I still was not the weakest rider in the world in the peloton. Even last year, I was second on stage tour of Austria, and so on. Yeah. And I could continue career, but I didn't want it. Just because team destroyed my love to cycling inside me. Really destroyed. And to find another team, it was almost impossible for Russian these years. That's why I decided to stop.
How would you say they destroyed your love? What sort of things did they do? Give me an example of things that happened.
It is difficult to explain. Look, it's difficult to explain, because when you look at the team from the side, it seems like everything is good. They have race, they have good races, they have salaries, they have bikes, and so on. But in general, atmosphere inside the team was terrible, was really terrible. On the second Giro in 2017, they pushed us so much about everything, about breakaways, and we were under the pressure psychologically and physically, and all team was destroyed because of
Because of our manager, yes. I can say it now. He can read it. And for me, it's now. But yeah, I can say it. All team was destroyed. And all riders understood. If they will stay in this team more than 2 years, they will finish the career. It's impossible. It was impossible to grow in this team. Who is strong? Only Vlasov. Okay, Alexander Vlasov was in our team, but he left quite fast. He was lucky, let's say. He is very strong guy. He's the strongest Russian now, but he had a bit luck that he left from our team, from Gazprom team, quite fast.
So when you did kind of disappear, I and other people tried to form a bit of a picture, a puzzle of what happened to you. And we looked on your Instagram. We saw you in places like the San Siro Stadium in Milan, Dubai, Cyprus. It left a lot to the imagination, let's say, in English. I mean, what's life been like? Tell me about the last few years.
Of course, it's difficult to retire because you don't know what to do after the sport. After I finished, maybe 3-4 months, I was just relaxing. I sit at home, I do something at home, play football, a bit running, but no cycling. I didn't touch bicycle next 4 years, I think. Yeah, and my friend had a small business in Moscow. I lived in Moscow after retired. And my friend had a small business in construction, let's say. And we started to work with him, and I was good. We worked there 3.5 years, and it was okay. And then after that, when war started, I went to Cyprus. Because Ilnur Zakarin and Vyacheslav Kuznetsov, so now I'm in Cyprus, they opened cycling club in Limassol, which includes cycling shop, cafe, bike service, club, gym area, and so on. Yeah, and they called me, if you want, you can come to us to work. And I thought, why not? Let's go.
And so you're how old now? You're 34.
34, yes.
Are you married with children?
I divorced, and I have wedding in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is she Russian?
She's Russian, yes.
Excellent. Excellent. And what are your plans for the future?
I love what I do. I love this club. I see a big opportunity to work here, and I want to improve this club because we are growing each year, and I hope that we will grow and grow, and I want to stay here for now.
So last thing, Alexander, if I call this episode the One Hit Wonder, do you know what that means?
One hit?
Yeah. So in music, when there's a band or a singer that has one huge hit and then they don't have another big hit, we call them a one-hit wonder.
Yes, yes, I understand.
Now, does that offend you or are you okay with that?
I'm okay. It's true. It is true. I'm nobody. I just won one stage in Enduro and that's it. Yes, it's true. It's about me.
Good morning, Daniel. Good morning to everybody. My name is Luca. I live in Limassol in Cyprus. It's now 8 years and I am a cyclist, of course.
I was at the Folly for a Day in Limassol this weekend.
Here in Limassol, there are a lot of people, immigrants from Russia. The community is very vibrant and among them, there are also the former pro cyclist Ilnur Zakarin, with his brother, and also Foliforov lives here, as it happened. And to honor the day he won the stage on the Giro d'Italia, they organized the nice, a very fun day, race here in Limassol. Of course, it was an individual time trial with a very famous local climb, around 8 kilometers more or less. For me, it was a 40 minutes effort. For Zakarin, it was a 25. There were more than 100 people participating. It was a very crowded event. Normally, events here are not so crowded. It was a very brilliant organization by them. They have a bike shop, they have a coffee shop. I mean, they are trying to build a whole community around cycling. The fact that it's mostly Russian is due to the fact that indeed it's organized and financed by Russian businessmen and Russian people. But they are trying slowly to reel in also locals. What about Folliforo? Folliforo, he enjoyed his day. He didn't make a very brilliant time. Maybe just took it easy recently with the training, I don't know. He was just enjoying the day and going with the flow, I guess. I saw him smiling, cheering and laughing with people around. Of course, I couldn't follow most of the conversation because 90% of the day was in Russian. But nevertheless, it was good fun.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.